She's an assistant professor in the Department of Health Science. She coordinates the undergraduate community health education program there and teaches classes related to health communications and program planning. Her research interests pertain to grief, suicide prevention, and suicide postvention. There still are a few empty seats. If standing people would prefer to sit, just come on, you know, just get in there and take those empty chairs. There's a few of them off to the sides. Dr. Hedman.
Thank you for attending today. I believe this is an old set of slides, so I apologize for any mistakes that you will see, but I did a study taking a look at clergy's views towards suicide, their experience with suicide, and looking at their perceived ability, which is self-efficacy, their confidence in their ability to discuss suicide, to ask questions about suicide ideation and plans and so forth. And so I'm happy to share the results with you today. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And Dr. Crosby and others have done a good job just demonstrating suicide and the prevalence of suicide. It is our 11th leading cause of death, very tragic among 15 to 24 year olds. It's our third leading cause of death. And I'm disappointed that there aren't more sessions here at EPHA on suicide and suicide prevention, since it is so devastating. Now, Dr. Crosby, this is your work, correct? I had no idea. So how exciting is that? I get to present alongside someone that I've cited. That's my goal one day. Maybe I'll see my name in lights. How awesome would that be? So you'll see his name throughout my slides here. And just more statistics there that you can read. Certain populations appear to have greater risks. As mentioned, we know that females do attempt suicide more often, but yet 75% of those that die by suicide are males. And different populations also have higher rates, and so there are some disparities there. I like to point out, though, that no one group is immune, and so within religious communities, religiousness and connectedness are believed to be protective factors against suicide, but that does not mean that because you attend a church or belong to a church that you are not immune from mental illness, depression, or suicide thoughts or behaviors. The Surgeon General, taking a look at direction for faith-based programs and clergy, have specific objectives to guide initiatives within churches and congregations, focusing on suicide prevention, education, and then also the role that clergy can play as a gatekeeper in being someone that can recognize suicide risks and potential harm and connect them to mental health professionals. And just further objectives that have been identified pertaining to clergy and the role of being a stakeholder to promote comprehensive suicide prevention efforts at the community level, and then also to provide those messages of hope, help, and resiliency. And the work that I've done, minimal probably compared to most of you in the room and what you've done, but what I've learned is that clergy are doing some amazing things within our communities. And you know, this element of fostering hope and connectedness, I've heard some amazing stories about what some of these people are doing, and it would be great if we could collectively put all this information together to share with others as a resource. Clergy have also identified themselves as playing a key role in suicide prevention, and this is from a work group that was put together, and clergy were coming to discuss what would be some areas that they could agree upon with their role for suicide prevention, and they're listed here: to foster hope, purpose, and meaning as a protective factor, to build an infrastructure and forum in the church community to support prevention efforts, to know when to refer to a provider, and to support survivors after suicide. And so indeed, clergy have been recognized and recognize themselves as playing some sort of role in suicide prevention. And research is limited with regards to their experience with suicide as well as their perceived abilities in dealing with these issues. And so my current study aimed to understand that a little bit more. Here are the research questions that I'll be briefly presenting to you today, just taking a look at the suicides reported in the congregation within the last 12 months, also 5 years, and what are their perceived roles related to providing suicide prevention and education? Do they believe that they've had adequate training with regards to suicide prevention? And then some additional self-efficacy variables are listed there in 4. And what is the likelihood that they would participate in training? and what is the likelihood that they would personally address an individual if concerned about their mental health. And so permission was granted through my university's IRB and took a look at two samples within Minnesota, the Catholic denomination and ELCA. And basically, if I could find contact information for those pastors, I sent them an email invitation or a postal mail survey inviting them to participate in the study. And my online search identified those names and contact information for me. And so 444 Catholic clergy were sent an invitation to participate, and 694 ELC clergy were invited. All pastoral positions were included. And then an instrument that was developed for this study was provided to them, included demographic information as well as information about their academic counseling experience or training programs that they've been involved in, and then several items related to experience with suicide and individuals approaching them about suicide ideation, and then the perceived abilities or self-efficacy comments as well. So I feel like am I okay? Okay. So response rates are listed here, and I had a total of 265 completed surveys. Most of the respondents were Caucasian, and most of them were male. The mean age was 52, and the mean size of the congregation was 1,934 members, although that was a very large range. Church location was rural, suburban, and urban there, and then the positions are reported also. 20% of clergy reported completing a pastoral counseling certificate program, and then when asked about their coursework or training relevant to counseling, moderate was defined as completing 5 or more training sessions or courses, and then moderate was 3 to 4, moderate 3 to 4, minimal was 1 to 2, and you can see there that how they reported on that. And this is where I have too much text, so I apologize here. But when taking a look at the average number of suicides within the congregation reported, in the past 12 months it was 0.39, and then in the past 5 years it was 1.37. Statistical analysis showed that Catholic clergy reported significantly higher mean of suicide than the ELC congregations did. And then taking a look at, the expression of suicide ideation and intent, a mean of 1.65 was reported there. I just have too much information to share with you. I feel like I need to blurt it all out here. I guess to just provide some overall conclusions in the few minutes I have left is that clergy agreed, the majority of them agreed, that it was their role to provide education on mental health and suicide prevention. But yet a lot of the comments reflected that they're not sure how to do that, and also that they expressed they just don't have enough time or resources to do that. They feel pretty burdened with the work that they are expected to do, and although they see suicide as being an important issue and one that they could work on, I think they need greater guidance in that area, how to support their congregations in that. Another comment too here, this identified role of building an infrastructure and forum in the church. What does that mean and what does that look like? Many clergy commented, that sounds good, but I'm not sure how to do that or what we should do to accomplish that. I have some tables, and I can leave my business cards if you're interested in this information. I also did a study taking a look at the role that clergy play in providing mental health counseling and help with depression, and so I'd be willing to share that information with you. But these are the areas here that you can see, and overall they agree that it is their role to provide education and also foster hope, purpose, and meaning as a protective factor. Suicide prevention training there, results were nearly 50% reported that they had received adequate training in recognizing behaviors. One interesting thing, though, if I fast forward a bit, with this slide, you can see an inverse relationship with a type of question. And so if you look on the left-hand side here, it says, if you were concerned about a parishioner, what would be the likelihood that you would do the following? Ask if they were experiencing depression, and you look over to the right, and you see that Most would be very likely or likely to do that. And then as the questions get a little bit more serious or intense, the likelihood decreases. And so I thought that was just a little interesting in that those are those important questions that we need to ask. You know, when Dr. Crosby mentioned that continuum of suicide behavior and, you know, when they have a plan, when they have a date set, those are the questions that need to be asked. And so am I at like 1 minute now? Okay. 2 minutes? All right. They are willing to participate in suicide prevention training. And so, and these are just some of the comments they made with regards to just feeling overworked and overwhelmed by their current duties. But I recently did a focus group with clergy and learned of some amazing things that they are doing. For example, one congregation has pastoral care teams, and I don't know how common or prevalent this is, but instead of burdening the pastor with all of this care and follow-up, they put together a care team within the congregation, a group of maybe six people that are well-known and trusted to that individual, and they follow up and provide connectedness and support to that individual. And he had shared examples where they've done that with somebody diagnosed with bipolar disorder, just to make sure that that individual is taking their medications and, you know, feeling support. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to have those groups in place. And so, conclusions, clergy could benefit from education and training and guidance just on what their role is. And I think especially in postvention as prevention, because that is the time when a lot of clergy get called into the families to help and are providing grief counseling. And I think that would be a great opportunity to provide more information for clergy to help them in that role.
Okay, I think so. Okay, good. A question or two.
Okay, yes.
I'm curious, either in your work or in others that you're aware of, has anybody looked at what the nature of pastoral counseling training is and what, how standardized it is and whether or not these pastors who do have the training are actually competent to do what their folks are coming to them for, or whether or not there's a need for some revision there?
Right. That's an excellent question. And from the research that I've reviewed, it seems that there is no real standardized set, you know, in seminary and training programs. So it is really varied. And pastors oftentimes will seek out those continuing education opportunities or workshops to gain those skills. But that's definitely an area of emphasis, is taking a look at what they're getting in seminary and in their theological studies and type of counseling.
Because it seems like to the extent they're not fully qualified, and may be drawing people to them who otherwise would benefit from going to a more qualified professional,
right.
It may actually be counterproductive.
Right. And the respondents that I've surveyed have been more than vocal, I think, many of them, in saying that I know what my limits are. And I know that mental illness cannot be cured by prayer, and that, you know, we do need to utilize mental health resources. And so referral is something that I've asked about, and I think there's increased understanding about the importance of that and bringing in other mental health professionals, experts for those people. Yeah?
I'm curious if you thought about looking specifically at religions and their ideology and thoughts on forgiveness and things like that, because I know you said Catholic Church had the highest suicide, and my thoughts are that the Catholic Church kind of has this idea of, you know, punishment and, you know, all these things of, you know, you're going to be punished if you do wrong things, and you're dealing with a population that feels like they are a burden, and I feel like if you're in a church that preaches punishment, that's going to guide that person to feel like even more of a burden. I wonder if you thought of maybe looking at that
as a moderator in other research. Excellent. Yes, well, and I just want to point out that my work is just, you know, based on Minnesota, and that was just one study, one sample. So I don't want you to walk away thinking that Catholics have higher suicide rates than Lutherans, because No, but that definitely is a factor, and I think that the shift is changing too among the respondents that I had. But of course, they see the survey and they're probably interested or have been affected by suicide or maybe more compassionate or empathetic, and so my sample is maybe a bit skewed. But you know, recognizing that God is a loving God and that salvation is there for past, previous, and future sins. I mean, that was something that came up. Although one Catholic priest did mention that, you know, within his congregation, within his church, it is still viewed as a sin. And he even sent me the doctrine stating, you know, the language. And so I think there is some of that still taking place. And for some, that might actually serve as a protective factor. If I'm going to be damned to hell, I might as well just live this hell, you know? And so, I mean, it's a very interesting area, though, to look into, and, yeah, very fascinating. And definitely there are a lot of different religious views, and that affects not only the person struggling, but after a suicide, the family and the stigma and shame and isolation that they may experience as well.
One more question.
Okay, one more? Yes.
You were talking about a group of people that are supporting the pastor. Were you talking about across the denominations?
You mean the pastoral care team? Okay. That was something that the pastor had organized within the church setting and had pulled together their own parishioners to help a member in the church.
And that was both Catholic and...
That actually was a different denomination from a different study, but I'm kind of mixing all my research up. But I'm just impressed with that, you know.
Well, was it a Protestant or Catholic?
I believe Assembly of God was the denomination.
It's because in most of the large Protestant and in Catholic churches, the diaconate, which is common across all of that, one of their traditional roles is to be the care circle for the pastor.
Mm.
So as far as targeting, because one of the things that get in the way that they were they understood was that they were overwhelmed, didn't have enough time, needed support around it. And just to go away, I think the people, because I've been on a diaconate and had been on, and I got training as a deacon. For some of these issues, and it was, I saw that as a really plugging in, you know, really nicely to pastor being able to take on that role more actively, mm-hmm. more comfortably, because they had people supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
So
excellent.
That would be a really interesting target group for, you know, interventions and training.
Yeah. And if you have any examples or stories about clergy and congregations doing work on this topic, I would be so interested in learning about that. So I hope you see me afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hedman.